Today on All Together Now, we have reports from Albany, Coxsackie, Ghent, Catskill, Hudson, Rensselaer County, Chatham, and points beyond. We'll talk to Francine Madeline Dagny and Bob Dagny as they preview It's Elementary, Lessons from the New Baltimore Schoolhouse, a show at the New Baltimore Reformed Church from May 21st to June 19th. The show listens to the stories of members of the community who attended school in the town's four-room schoolhouse from the 1930s to the 1960s. We'll also hear Sauerkraut Seth call in about the Oakdale Lake Community Cleanup Day, May 22nd, talking to Ellen Thurston and Tom DiPietro on the WGXC Afternoon Show. We'll hear a little bit from the Coxsackie Athens Community Band's performance May 15th at Gallagher's in Cairo for the Cairo Historical Society, and IDM Theftable provides the song of the day.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Accra, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio Daily News and Weather Report for Friday, May the 20th, 2016. I'm Philip Grant. Katie Kosajanski is reporting in the Daily Mail that the Catskill Village Board has approved its $4.5 million 2016-17 budget following an appropriations hearing at Catskill High School. Under the village charter, the public is allowed to examine the annual spending plan in detail and to vote on selected budget line items. Under the budget, there are no raises on the horizon for Catskill Village trustees and other elected officials. Annual salaries will remain at $5,000 for village trustee and $14,318 for village justice. Department of Public Works and non-union village employees will see an increase of 2.5% in their paychecks, however. Contract negotiations are currently underway with the Catskill Police Department. You can read that full story in the Daily Mail. The Ghent Community Action Network announced on Wednesday, May 18th, the formation of a community broadband task force for Columbia County. According to the group's Facebook page and a statement released by Ghent Town Board member Patty Matheny, Connect Columbia intends to play a role in bringing affordable broadband to the county through advocacy with local, county, state, and federal officials. Members of the Connect Columbia Steering Committee include Matheny, Matthew Nelson, Ichabod Crane School Board member, and regional representative to the Capital Region Regional Economic Development Council, Alexandra Petragilia, a member of the Hudson Development Corporation Board, and representatives from the AmCram, Ghent, and New Lebanon Broadband Committees. According to July 2014 data from the New York State Broadband Program Office, 74% of the county's population is unserved by broadband of 6 megabytes or more per second, which makes Columbia and the neighboring Greene County the two worst-served counties in the state. Now here's a report from Andrea Sears on the Department of Labor's expansion of overtime protections.
The U.S. Labor Department's expansion of overtime protections for salaried employees will have a broad impact on other workers as well. Employers can require salaried workers paid $455 a week or more to work well over 40 hours without any extra pay. The regulations released Wednesday double that. In 1975, more than 60% of all salaried workers were entitled to overtime protection, but today it's only 8%. According to Michael Wasser of Jobs with Justice, when the regulation goes into effect in December, employers will have three options.
They're either going to have to give them their time back by limiting their work to 40 hours in a week, or they will be bumped up to the new threshold. Alternatively, the employer can choose to pay them overtime.
Part-time workers are likely to see their hours and their paychecks increase as well, as employers shift hours away from managers who often work 50 or more hours a week. Governor Andrew Cuomo praised the new regulation, saying it will help ensure fairness and equality in the workplace. And Wasser points out the overtime protections supplement the governor's successful efforts to raise the minimum wage in New York.
It's hard to encourage employers to lift the pay of people who are several bands above the minimum wage. This will do that and will bring back overtime protections for many people who've seen it slip.
Some Republicans in Congress have threatened to take action to block the new overtime protections. Congress has 60 legislative days to review new regulations and can pass a bill to stop the change from taking effect. But Wasser says as long as President Obama is in the White House, that's not likely to succeed.
Either the president has to sign the bill, which won't happen, or the Congress needs to have the votes to override the veto, which it currently probably does not have.
The Economic Policy Institute estimates that the new regulation will benefit 12.5 million workers nationwide. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
Now here's a report from Andrea Sears on local school budgets.
Voters across the state of New York approved almost 99% of school budgets on Tuesday. The State School Board Association reports that budgets in only 10 of almost 700 districts in the state were rejected, an approval rating almost identical to last year. Matt Smith with New York State United Teachers calls the vote a resounding endorsement of the direction of New York's public education system.
Voters in every region of the state came out and showed that they have confidence in their public school system, their teachers, and the other professionals.
An increase in state aid to education in the budget for the coming year will help districts maintain or even expand programs for students without increasing local property taxes. 8 of the 10 districts where voters rejected the budget had sought to raise property taxes above the state-imposed cap that this year stands at less than 1/8 of 1%. Smith points out that overriding the tax cap requires a supermajority of 60% of the votes.
That tax cap continues to limit the ability of school districts to raise revenues on the local level that they determine to be necessary to fund critical programs.
Voters in 28 school districts did approve overriding the tax cap, but Smith believes the property tax cap, which is tied to inflation, still robs communities of local control of their school budgets.
So we would like to see that supermajority component done away with so that we return to a more democratic system of one person, one vote.
Those districts that failed to pass a budget on Tuesday can hold a second vote next month. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
Marie J. French is reporting in the Albany Business Review that Northeastern New York lost 12% of its doctors in 2015 with a shortage of medical help. According to a 2015 survey of hospitals and health systems by the Hospital Association of New York, 27% of hospitals are looking to fill positions. A shortage of primary care physicians may make it harder for the state's Medicaid program to reduce avoidable emergency room visits and hospitalizations, according to the Hayes Physician Shortage Report. You can read that full story in the Albany Business Review. Melanie Lekachevic in the Greene County News reports that the Coxsackie Farmers Market opened for its fifth year on May 18th with three new vendors. Nine Pin Cider Works, Lime Kiln Farms, and Gluten Free Dessert Kitchen were added to the market, held Wednesdays in Coxsackie's Riverside Park from 4 to 7 p.m. through September 28th. There are fruits and vegetables, cider, beer, wine, honey, maple syrup, goat's milk, cheese, flowers, baked goods, meat, and goat's milk soap and other products at the market. Market manager Kim Bender said, and I quote, "One thing we are doing different from last year is we will have a master gardener from Cornell Cooperative Extension each week, and they will do free soil testing and answer questions about anything related to the outdoors," end quote. You can read that full story in the Greene County News. Rick Carlin in the Albany Times-Union reports that presidential candidate Donald Trump is in charge of New York's Republican Party, at least when it comes to picking at-large delegates for the party's convention. Former New York governor and presidential candidate last fall, George Pataki, was kept off of New York's slate of delegates by Trump forces in the party. While Pataki was on an earlier list of delegates, he wasn't named on May 18th during a meeting in Colony of party officials. TACI spokesman Dave Catalfamo said the former governor was not trying to become a delegate and said Pataki won't endorse Trump until he reverses his position on deporting millions of undocumented immigrants. You can read that full story in the Times Union. The summer should be warmer and wetter if the National Weather Service's three-month outlook is to be believed. New York State is predicted to be warmer than average this summer, and more rain is expected from the Albany area to Maine, according to the National Weather Service.
Behind us, we're listening to the sounds of Friday afternoon's Pond Station at Wave Farm from Zach Koff's Pond Station. You can listen online from sunset to sunset to the sound of the microphones at the bottom of the pond at Wave Farm. National Weather Service in Albany predicts cool overnight with a temperature of 46 degrees. Saturday, there's a chance of showers after 2 p.m., a high near 66. Saturday night, the chance of rain continues to 40% with a low around 47. Sunday, there is a 50% chance of rain with a high near 65 and a low around 49.
This is Tom Rowe with a WGXC News update. Governor Andrew Cuomo announced May 20th that New York State Department of Environmental Conservation operated campgrounds in the Adirondack and Catskill parks are now open for the summer camping season. The DEC operates 52 campgrounds and six-day use areas in the Adirondack and Catskill Forest Preserves open through Labor Day, with some facilities remaining open during fall foliage and hunting seasons. Sites are available on a first-come, first-served basis, and you can find more information on the WGXC Newsroom website. Amelia Teasdale on the Columbia paper reports that the Chatham Village authorized the formation of a Chatham Police Bicycle Unit May 12th. The Village Police Department will buy two new bikes and have an old one refurbished, with bike patrol starting in July. Quote, "I'm looking forward to it," unquote, Chief Volcom told the board about the bike unit. Quote, "I think it gets people talking to officers," unquote. Read the full story in the Columbia paper. On May 19th, there was news on several fronts about Rensselaer County water. First, the Environmental Protection Agency set a new lifetime drinking water health advisory of 70 parts per trillion for human exposure to the chemical PFOA. The Albany Times Union reports that there are six public water systems in New York State, two in Rensselaer County, that have detected PFOA in their water supplies in excess of the EPA's new guidance standard. Also May 19th in Rensselaer County, the State Department of Environmental Conservation declared Taconic, a Petersburg plastics company, a state Superfund site after the factory there was linked to a PFO contamination of water supplies. In January, St. Gobain Performance Plastics in the village of Hoosick Falls was also declared a state Superfund site. Read the full story in the Albany Times Union.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio Daily News and Weather Report for today, Friday, the 20th day of May 2016. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Our first interview on All Together Now today is from Francine Madeline Dagny and Bob Dagny, who preview It's Elementary, Lessons from the New Baltimore Schoolhouse, the show at the New Baltimore Reformed Church from May 21st to June 19th, tuning in to members of the community who attended the four-room schoolhouse in New Baltimore from the 1930s to the 1960s. The show will later move to Catskill in Athens.
All right, I'm Tom Rowe in the Wave Farm studio now with Francine Madeline Dagny and Bob Dagny from New Baltimore, and they have a show called It's Elementary Lessons from May 21st to June 19th at the New Baltimore Reformed Church. Francine, you want to tell us about the show?
Sure. It's actually Lessons from the New Baltimore Schoolhouse, which is a building that we move to for my husband's business and for a place to get away from urban life in 2012. And the building hadn't been lived in for a few years, so it was really musty and overgrown. And we would keep the doors open every time that we were there, which attracted a lot of people in the neighborhood. And they'd come up to the open doors, knock on their door, and give us advice about how we should fix up our home. And also tell us about their times at the school. A lot of the people went to school there, even though it closed in 1963. There are, of course, many residents who still live there. And for some strange reason, in little towns, people know you before you even meet them. And everywhere we went, we would hear, oh, you're the couple with the schoolhouse. I went to that schoolhouse. And it would be at AgFest or at the New Baltimore Farmers Market or at the New Baltimore Conservancy Taste of History House Tour. Things would always turn to, I went to school there.
I've been in your house before.
Yes, yes. And then one of the committee members at the Greene County Historical Society sent us a little packet filled with vintage photographs of people who went to the school. They always took a school picture on the stairs. There are 9 stairs that lead up to the porch. And these photographs dated all the way back to the 30s. And I would, yeah, but the ones that Jean sent us especially, and I would look at these faces and go, they all look so sad. You know, what happened at this school? And I would think, did they, like, skip up these stairs? Did they pitter-patter up these stairs? Were they happy about being here? You know, I always wondered about them. So then when I heard these stories, I thought, I've got to collect them, because people spoke about the school with so much pride and love. And I thought, this was a special place, and it always feels good to be in there. When it just has a great vibe to it. You know, it's a very imposing building. It is filled with, it's on Route 144 in Church Street in New Baltimore. It's at the crest of a hill, and it is a big, imposing, 2-story, 4-room brick schoolhouse. It takes up a lot of space.
With a bell tower.
Yeah, with a bell tower. So people were interested in that building and what was going to happen to it, because it had not been used for so many years. People were worried about the building and who is going to move into it and who's going to take care of it and are they going to take care of it. So there was a lot of back and forth in terms of communicating about the building itself and what we were going to do. When we were at the New Baltimore Farmers Market one Saturday, it just so happened that one of the purveyors there who sells honey went to the school and just like extemporaneously told us this story about how he planted the trees one Arbor Day. That was their assignment. And the boys went out and dug the holes and they planted trees there. And those trees are still there. And we used to have these great kickball games. We have a really long front lawn, and the boys and girls would take turns kicking the ball, and if it would reach the belfry, you got a home run. And he told it with so much detail, and he had this great smile on his face, and he was just so full of pride when he said it. And I thought, I wish I had a recorder with me right now, because I know I'll never get this story the same way again, you know. But I thought, I'm going to interview people. And I went across the street to the church and said, do you know people who went to the school? And of course they did. And it sort of grew from there. They gave me names of people, and those people gave me names of people. And at first I just thought it was going to be like a thank you to the community. But I really saw how the singular becomes the universal, and that there were these patterns about things to learn about education, about how kids played in this idyllic, you know, river town, how they interacted with shopkeepers and the religious life of the town, and it really had historical merit. And I think that it needs to be preserved. So being a visual person, I do photo styling in New York. I thought, this has to be an exhibit with portraits and text panels. And people would say, well, why isn't it a book? And I always thought there would be like a catalog attached to the exhibit. But some of these interviews were 2-3 hours long in 14 single space typewritten pages. And I knew no one could ever read interviews on a wall. No one would have the patience for that. So there did need to be a book that contains the entire interviews. At the exhibit, there will be wonderful excerpts from the interviews that are in text panels.
Did you record them? Is there audio?
We are working on audio. We're working on cleaning up the tapes right now. But I hadn't really thought to do the audio at first, so I think by the time we get to Athens, that will be ready.
Because you're going to travel this show?
Yes, the show is going to be at the New Baltimore Reformed Church with an opening reception and book signing on May 21st, which is a Saturday between 1 and 4 p.m., and it will continue at the church through June 19th. And then on July 16th, it goes to the Freightmasters building at Catskill Point for 2 weeks. And then it will go to the Athens Cultural Center in September with another reception and book signing on the 17th, which is a Saturday evening from 6 to 8. And it will be up through October 16th there. And from there, we'll see where it goes.
And does it do different interviews for those different towns, or is it the same interviews?
No, everybody will be reading from the same 19 people who I interviewed, and there are portraits of all of these people. There's a wonderful tribute to a gentleman whose name is Cliff Baldwin, who was sort of the town mayor, your favorite uncle, historian, who knew everything about New Baltimore and went to that school. And it was too bad that I missed interviewing him, but I did get to interview his daughter and son-in-law and then neighbors who just know about him and got some wonderful stories via these people that he told.
I think it's important to note that Fran will be donating all the materials that she has collected to the Better Library at the...
In Coxsackie?
Yes, at the Green...
Yeah.
Green Historical Society, I believe, so that in the future if someone wants to hear the audio or simply research the documents, they'll be available.
And what years are we talking about that people went to school there that you interviewed?
Well, Cliff went to school there in the 20s, and the interviews that I did start with a woman who graduated in 1937, and it goes all the way up to the people who actually could not finish school there because the school had closed before they finished their 6 years, in 63, in 1963.
And what sort of change does that period do you find from the interviews?
Well, again, it was a four-room schoolhouse. All four rooms were not used all the time. Sometimes there were two grades taught in one room. Sometimes there were up to four grades taught in one room, all with one teacher. Of course, the number of children in each grade changed throughout the years. And there were outhouses until the 1950s.
That's a big change.
Yeah.
You don't want to rush into indoor plumbing.
Yeah. In the way they played, the equipment that they had was, you know, of course there were changes in that. But despite that big span of time, it was always a place where the kids congregated, and it was a real anchor of the hamlet. And people, you know, they went to school there. Some of them went home for lunch. They rushed right back for recess, finished school, had dinner, went back to the schoolyard, you know, to hang out when they could.
Yeah, people may have spent more time there than in any other single building in the town.
Yeah.
I mean, you go to church once a week, you go to town hall to get business done once in a while, but where else do you go that often?
Right, right.
And it had equipment, and there was no real park to speak of at that point. in town. So this is so,
it was the park.
It was the park.
I mean, there certainly was a ball field, and of course they play by the river. As a matter of fact, one of the women told me they were called river rats, you know, because there was life at, you know, the river too. But the school was a real hub. And, you know, community groups sometimes use the school, like the Girl Scouts and the Boy Scouts. So it was an important part of people's lives. And we had no idea, you know. So we just happened into this.
What was the reception around town when you started interviewing folks?
They were very curious as to why I was doing this, especially because I'm not from the area. And they're really excited about it. You know, like, oh my gosh, you're putting New Baltimore on the map, you know. I think people don't, you know, people don't realize how important everyone is to a community, you know, and to the betterment of all our lives for the future. So they're, I wouldn't say they're in shock, but they are really excited about it. And curious at the same time.
We see when in the news around here, when there are school closings proposed, people are very passionate and very upset because it's they went there and they don't want their school to close.
Right, and there are like families where, you know, 3-4 generations of family members went to that school. And the funniest thing that I found out while I was interviewing people is that they're all related to each other in one way or another, you know. So it's a close-knit hamlet.
We'll hear more from Francine Madeline Dagny and Bob Dagny in a moment after this song from the Coxsackie Athens Community Band, performance May 15th at Gallagher's in Cairo for the Cairo Historical Society.
Thank you.
was the Coxsackie Athens Community Band performing May 15th at Gallagher's in Cairo for the Cairo Historical Society. Now let's hear more from Francine Madeline Dagny and Bob Dagny about It's Elementary, Lessons from the New Baltimore Schoolhouse, an art show at the New Baltimore Reformed Church from May 21st to June 19th, listening to stories from the members of the community who attended the school's four-room schoolhouse from the 1930s to the 1960s. The show later will move to Catskill in Athens. Here's Francine Madeline Dagny and Bob Dagny.
And what brought you to this particular school?
Well, Bob was looking for a workshop outside of New York City and went online, and boom, the school presented itself.
It was online real estate?
The story's somewhat longer in the fact that there was another woodworker in my building, a really nice guy, very talented guy, and I saw him in the lobby with a bunch of furniture one day, and I said, "What are you doing? Are you moving out on me, Patrick?" He says, "No, but I got tired of driving 2.5 hours just to get to a spot in Brooklyn with no heat and rats." So he took a compass, right? And we're on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. He took a compass and for a 2-hour circle from, you know, where could he be? He ended up in Claverack because he had connections in Hudson, was into that scene. And I thought, that's a very smart idea. And I was at that point in an 18x9 room working with woodworking machinery and various projects, and it was a little tight, and there was nothing in that side of the river that interested me, mostly because of cost. It seemed pretty prohibitive, and I have a sister who lives in Ravenna, and at one point a house in New Baltimore had come up, and it was the first sale since it was built. It was built by the Stewart family, who were shipbuilders, and when I saw the house, I said, "Oh, boy, I got to have that house." But it never actually went to sale. Someone in the community reached out and bought it. And so since there was nothing around Claverack, I said, "Oh, I wonder if that house ever came up." And when I hit New Baltimore, the schoolhouse popped up. And I said, "Wow." I had always wanted a loft in the country, but we always thought that was just some sort of fantasy. And there it was. I called up my brother-in-law, who used to be in real estate, and his ex-partner was around, and I called him up, and he said, "When do you want to see it?" I said, "Tomorrow." We went, I looked at it, and I put a bid in the same day. I knew, as soon as I walked in, I knew it was it. It had been owned by an artist before me, Frank Lido, and his wife, who's a very accomplished potter, Trudy Lido. And
who was also the art teacher at the schoolhouse.
So he had it set up as a working art studio on the first floor already, with the outlets that come up out of the floor where you put the machinery. I mean, it was the big tables, assembly tables. It was pretty much set to go. So I said, "What's wrong with this?" Of course, later on, I just find out.
There's got to be something, yes.
Yeah, there was quite a bit. We have since, there's only 100 amps of power in there. I needed a water treatment system. There's still no hot water.
Older buildings always have something.
there is a lot. There's a lot, but it's very substantial. I mean, the ground floor or the basement, the walls are 2 foot thick stone, and the footings go down 9 feet because as I had an opportunity, Ted Hillshear, who's the town historian in Baltimore, dug out some paperwork for me, and I got to read the engineer's report from the fellow who surveyed the land before the school was built. And so this was about 1892, 93, he said this report. And it turns out the site was a bog. He said the bog is no more than 9 feet deep with quicksand, which I thought, well, that's very interesting. So to have a building with that much weight.
There's quicksand in Greene County?
There certainly was in New Baltimore at that time. The issue was from natural formation of the land, as the hill slopes down towards the river, there was a natural 9 foot deep crevice in the rock, right, that then went back up, and that's where they built the church. The church is then, the rock rises back up, and they built the church on that, the New Baltimore Dutch Reformed Church. And so that hole just continually filled with whatever slid down the hill in rainstorms. And this was a box. So they filled it in, and it hasn't gone anywhere, but there's always quite a bit of water thereabouts. And dealing with the water, as my understanding, has always been a very big issue for anyone who's owned it, and even more so now that there's much more hardscaping uphill. You know, there's a fire station was put up there, and a number of developments, and so there's more roads, there's more roofs, so there's more water running down the hill. So that's kind of a constant battle as well. But yeah, the building itself is pretty massive. It would take a lot to get rid of it. And the attic itself, the attic rises up 20 feet, and it looks like a barn. There are three huge trusses that run wall to wall that hold up the entire ceiling of the second floor. So the second floor initially was one large room. Anyway, it's enough about the building. It's a spectacular building. I really love it. I fell in love with it, basically what happened. I showed up, bought it.
We're talking to Bob Daney and Francine Madeline Daney about the It's Elementary Lessons from the New Baltimore Schoolhouse show that's opening May 21st at the New Baltimore Reformed Church and running through June 19th. And then it's going to Catskill in Athens?
It's going to the Freightmasters building at Catskill Point July 16th through 31st, and then off to Athens September 17th through October 16th.
What was the most surprising thing, I guess, from interviewing people that you found out?
Well, I think I was most surprised by an interview I did with Bill Fink, who is 82 years old now, because he witnessed so many fires that broke out along the river, and at one point he lived right along the river on Main Street, and became a volunteer fireman. And I thought, my gosh, how did you overcome that fear and then allow yourself to be put in harm's way that way? And he did it. So that was a real surprise for me. And I just think the camaraderie that lasted, you know, most of the people I interviewed are in their late 60s, early 70s, and still keep in touch with each other and know each other really well and see each other. It's a very different experience than I had growing up. The way they just had the Hanacroy and all of the trails that they could play on and building forts from Christmas trees, the way they played was so different than my experience, you know, growing up in a city. And literally playing stickball in the gutter, you know, was really different from having so many places to explore and enjoy nature. It, you know, I don't think they take it for granted, but really it's such a joy to have that, and I'm so glad I can experience it now as an adult because I didn't have that as a child. And just what characters all these people are and how wonderful they all are. It was a great experience getting to know these people, and just how they opened up to me with their childhood memories was really special.
Next, Sauerkraut Seth called in to the May 19th WGXC afternoon show with Ellen Thurston and Tom DiPietro about the Oakdale Lake Community Cleanup Day, May 22nd.
Ellen, excuse me for a second, but we seem to have a phone call.
Really?
Yeah, let's see who it
How
is.
How exciting.
Sounds exciting. Don't tell us. Let us guess. Are you there?
I am here. This is Sauerkraut Seth.
Oh, God. It's you again. No, sorry. No, it's very exciting. Our favorite caller, Sauerkraut Seth.
Favorite caller?
Caller. Yeah, you're a favorite caller, too.
Hi, Seth.
Hi. I hope that I'm not being redundant, but I don't know if you plugged, because I'm in and out of the car on Thursday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't hear the whole show, but I hear as much as I can when I'm in the car. We're cleaning up Oakdale on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Did you have that in your list?
Has this been talked about?
Not yet, but
okay,
that's great. I mean, it's a great project. Why don't you tell us a little about how it came about, since we have you here?
Well, I believe some people from Hudson Forward came up with the idea and got some sponsors like Etsy and Village Dodge and I think Columbia Green Media
are
Yeah,
sponsors.
Yeah, I think Village Dodge is where it started, and other people started joining in. And they have
a gentleman named David McDonald contacted me about it. That's where I first heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
I live right near Oakdale, so I go in there and sometimes clean out garbage regardless, because people like to dump there for some reason. But nevertheless, you know, there's going to be a lot of people there from 10 to 1. I believe Etsy's going to somehow cater it or get someone to cater it. And
bags will be provided?
Mm-hmm.
Bags will be provided?
Yes, by the DPW.
How about those little sticks with the points on them?
I don't know if they have those.
I don't know.
I love those.
But
you could bring one.
I don't have one. But
maybe gloves will be provided. I don't know what will be provided except lunch will be provided.
Lunch will be provided? Whoa, who's providing that?
I believe Etsy is getting somebody to cater it.
Nice.
Uh-huh.
That's my understanding.
Hey, free lunch. Oh, you got to work for
it. And just coincidentally, Oakdale is going to be 100 this year.
Really?
Yeah, it's an artificial lake, actually.
Yeah, we knew that,
It was dug in 1915, but I think it was first opened for swimming in a park in 1916. So.
Wow. That's pretty neat.
Are they going to clean out all those things that grow in the lake? They have to do that?
I think that that's sort of done before swimming.
Yeah, it's done by DPW.
That's kind of a different issue. But I think what we're doing is sort of picking up trash that's
the garbage
on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, 10-4.
You're listening to radio news about radio waves. Headlines from the ether. Headlines.
John Anderson in DIYmedia.net, after the National Association of Broadcasters Convention in Las Vegas, looks at the big picture with radio. While television broadcasters are about to make a bundle selling off Spectrum, the radio industry is hearing lots of bad news recently. iHeartMedia is staving off angry bondholders over its several billion dollars worth of debt, while the next biggest radio company, Cumulus Media, is fighting off bankruptcy. Emmis may be delisted by NASDAQ in early June, and CBS is spinning off its entire radio division and might sell. The collapse of the radio conglomerates may mean some major industry sea change, Anderson posits, and future thinkers are wondering if radio is keeping up with multi-platform interactivity. And if cars become driverless, listeners will be even more distracted by thousands of other options. Note, Anderson is on Wavefarm's board. I'm Tom Rove, reporting for Wavefarm Radio and WGXC.
Next, the national headlines from Public News Service.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, May 20th, 2016. I'm Mark Richardson. In today's News Digest, the search continues for Egypt Air Flight 804, which some officials believe was taken down by terrorists. When you jump in the swimming pool this summer, make sure you know what you're getting into. And health officials say it's not whether the Zika virus will come to our shores, just a matter of when. Another airline mystery tops our news as officials continue to search for an Egypt Air jetliner with 66 people aboard, which veered wildly in flight and crashed into the Mediterranean Sea. Officials say it may have been brought down by terrorists. There were no signs of survivors. Egypt Air Flight 804 was en route from Paris when it went down about halfway between the Greek island of Crete and Egypt's coastline. Radar indicates that the plane spun all the way around and suddenly lost altitude before it vanished. Meanwhile, officials in California are planning to dramatically roll back strict mandatory water conservation rules imposed at the height of the state's multi-year drought. They say a wet winter eased conditions in part of the state. California's Water Resources Board voted to end mandatory conservation of up to 36% in many communities, moving instead to a system under which only regions where a shortage is anticipated will need to conserve. Lawmakers in Oklahoma approved a bill Thursday that would make performing abortions a felony and revoke the medical licenses of most physicians who assist in such procedures. The sweeping measure, which opponents describe as unconstitutional, now heads to Republican Governor Mary Fallon. She'll have 5 days to decide whether to sign the bill, veto it, or allow it to become law without her signature. It will be summer soon, and just when you thought it was safe to go back in the pool, health officials warn that it could be full of nasty parasites.
Healthy and Safe Swimming Week begins on Monday, and in a new report, the CDC says nationwide testing shows most public swimming areas had at least one violation, and one in eight had to be closed immediately. Dr. Michael Beach, the agency's associate director for Healthy Water, says it doesn't mean never go to a public pool or water park, but it does mean you should be proactive by checking to see if the water's okay. He says one simple way to do that is by buying test strips.
You're essentially taking a strip and dipping it in the water and reading a color. Make sure the drain at the bottom of the deep end of the pool is visible. This means the water is clear enough for lifeguards and others to see swimmers underwater who may need help. If you can't see the main drain, the pool shouldn't be open.
The CDC looked at data on tests done on 85,000 public swimming areas with water that had been treated. Beach says human feces accounts for about 3/4 of all outbreaks of illness from public pools. I'm Veronica Carter reporting.
Funding cuts to higher education have driven up tuition, making college less affordable and less accessible to many students. That, according to a new national report, the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities says with inflation factored in, states on average are spending 17% less on higher education than they did when the recession hit in 2008. The state of Kentucky is spending about 32% less. The report's author, Michael Mitchell, says almost every state is now trying to reinvest in college, while a few states, including Kentucky, are going backwards.
Unfortunately, for students, when it comes to tuition, when it comes to quality of schools, it puts in question whether or not those things will be there, affordability and quality, moving forward.
The report shows that 37 states increased college funding over the last year, but Kentucky is one of only three states to make cuts. Mitchell says when states cut funding, student debt goes up, meaning many graduates are forced to postpone life events such as buying a house or a car or starting a business. In Colorado, sewage is starting to smell more like energy, and some say it could be a way to slow climate change.
Raw sewage rarely draws a crowd, but former Colorado Governor Bill Ritter joined city leaders from across the state in Denver yesterday to learn more about turning human waste into natural gas. David Cox with the Renewable Natural Gas Coalition says turning waste into fuel can actually lower greenhouse gas emissions that would otherwise be released on farms, landfills, and water treatment facilities.
Renewable natural gas provides an opportunity to convert everyday waste into transportation fuel or renewable electricity. This can be part of Colorado's solution to smog and air pollution to combat climate change.
Cox explains the same energy extracted by drilling deep into the earth can be harvested from landfills and sewage because regardless of where organic matter decomposes, methane, the primary component of natural gas, is released. And he says since methane is more than 80 times more powerful at trapping heat than carbon dioxide, redirecting emissions into a pipeline could help reduce climate pollution. I'm Eric Galatis.
Public health officials in Texas are warning that the Zika virus is almost certainly on its way there this summer, and it could have a devastating effect on impoverished communities in coastal and border cities. Experts told state lawmakers this week that Zika cases contracted through mosquito bites would likely start showing up as early as June. Peter Hotez, dean of Baylor College of Medicine's School of Tropical Medicine, says if a pregnant woman contracts the virus, it can block the development of her baby's brain.
This is what I've been calling the virus from hell. It's really every parent's nightmare. It crosses over into their placentas and ultimately halts the development of their baby's brain. I can't think of a more nightmarish scenario.
Officials with the state health department say there have already been 35 confirmed cases of Zika in Texas, but almost all of them were contracted by people who traveled to infected areas of Central and South America. They say the disease will spread much faster once it's transmitted by the mosquito population. They're urging state officials to begin a mosquito eradication program sooner rather than later. And that's the news. I'm Mark Richardson for Public News Service. member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
Behind us, we're listening to the sounds of Friday afternoon's Pond Station at Wave Farm from Zach Poff's Pond Station. You can listen online from sunset to sunset to the sound of the microphones at the bottom of the pond at Wave Farm. National Weather Service in Albany predicts cool overnight with a temperature of 46 degrees. Saturday, there's a chance of showers after 2 p.m., a high near 66. Saturday night, the chance of rain continues to 40% with a low around 47. Sunday, there is a 50% chance of rain with a high near 65 and a low around 49. And then Monday, there's a 30% chance of rain with a high near 69. You're listening to WGXC.
This is Tamara with the community calendar. You can go to WGXC.org, click on the community calendar, and click on the calendar page. At the top of the page, there's an add an event button, and you can add your own event to the community calendar. Folks like me will read it on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at WGXC.org in the community calendar. All sorts of things going on Saturday, May 21st in the WGXC listening area. There's a garden education day and plant sale at the Cornell Cooperative Extension of Albany County from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday, May 21st. Children's workshops at the Art O'Mai Fields, 10 a.m. to noon, May 21st. Mountaintop Arboretum hosts Hemlocks Through History, a talk from Mike Kudish, Catskills forest historian and author, discussing the history of hemlocks in the Catskills. Saturday, May 21st, at the Cairo Public Library, artist Matt Bua discusses his theory about stone wall building in ancient and recent times in the Catskills. That's from 1 to 3 p.m. Saturday, May 21st, at the Cairo Public Library, sponsored by the Cairo Historical Society. Omai International Arts Center in Ghent hosts an opening with many artists, Kylie Farrell, Becca Fortune, Cassandra Fraley, Hannah Hutchinson, and others. That's from 2 to 4 p.m. in Ghent. Peter Alexanian, Samsa Peralta, and MC Martyr are at the Inky Editions show at 4 p.m. Closing reception starts at 7 p.m. That's at Inky Editions, 112 Front Street in Hudson, part of the Lazarus Project show. Also Saturday, May 21st, Drop, Forge, and Tool has a printing and painting on fabric workshop from 5 to 7 p.m. in Hudson with artists Jen Hewitt and Caitlin Parker. Gideon's Knot is at the Bridge Street Theater Saturday, May 21st at 7:30 p.m. Amy Goodman from Democracy Now! Speaks Saturday, May 21st at 7 p.m. at the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy. Broadcast on WOOCLP in Troy and rebroadcast simultaneously by WGXC FM 90.7. So turn out for Amy Goodman at the Sanctuary for Independent Media or tune in to Amy Goodman on the radio at 90.7 FM WGXC.
Next, it's time for the Hudson Valley Song of the Day, a performance from a musician visiting the Capital Region or Hudson Valley, or who regularly plays around these parts.
Song of the Day today is Get Back Zodiac from IDM Theftable. Will be at My Life in the Bush of Ghosts in New Paltz on Friday, May 20th. Doom, 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 doom.
Stars, constellations of doom, do help you. Oh man, oh man, it's good to be a guy who's silly, astrologer. Man, so we're happy. Get your stars and tell me what's doing it. Man, so we're happy. So take the course of the test and recycle it.
This is kind of a position for the planet because it gives us the opportunity to just go out.
Beams, pulling on strings, watch the sun stars, make your own decisions. You can't touch me, I never came. Won't fall victim to the galaxy's molesting hand. Get back, so we're happy. Ain't no stars gonna tell me what to do today. Get back, so we're happy. So take the horoscope and do some recycling.
Today's gonna come out of the stomach. A good relaxing stuff, nothing obnoxious.
I wear a helmet, I stay inside. Find me underneath my bed, home tonight. Down in the basement, down in the dark. Dig my holes so deep, can't put my head up in the mid. Get back somewhere. Ain't no scholars here, tell me what to do with it now. Get back somewhere. So take the horse over, come sit in the sacrament.
Okay.